Welcome everybody back to Veil of Sound. I'm very happy to have one band here whom I did not know until roughly 2.5 years ago, but due to our friends at Eisenwald over in Gotha, I got to know them. And I have to say their last record, Destin Messianique, was already a real revelation. And now I was able to listen to the next one already. And Le Cloître, I think is the name of it. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it was even better. So I'm very happy to have David and Jean-Loup here from Giver. So thanks for joining the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for your interest. And your last review of Destin Messianique was really thorough and I think well appreciated. Thank you.
That's the way it should be, shouldn't it? I first of all, before I ask the usual question that we always have here, I first want to make sure that I pronounce the name correctly. Is it Giver or how do I pronounce it en français?
Well, en français, it's Givre.
Oh, so similar Givre. To chiffre. Oh, Givre.
Yeah, okay. Similar to chiffre, but with a J at the beginning.
Okay. And then the usual question that we always have here at Veil of Sound. Where are you right now and what is the band shirt of the day?
Go, Jean-Loup.
Okay, yeah. I'm in the Abitibi-Témiscamingue, Rouyn-Noranda. It's like a far lost place in northern Quebec. We're both from there. Actually, the band was born there many years ago. And yeah, it's a small mining region. And my shirt of the day is Spectral Wound, a super good black metal band from Montreal.
Yeah. It's a really good one. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe you heard of it, yeah.
It's one of my go-to genres, so I should know that. So, David.
I'm in Montreal currently, moved there 10 years ago. And yeah, I go back to Rouyn-Noranda sometimes, but for now I live in Montreal. And my shirt of the day is Miserere Luminis, which is, in which I play, but do not compose, but is a amazing post-metal band from around Montreal. So they're a good friend of us and helped us produce the last album in part.
The last album or the new album?
The new album. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And helped us produce albums of the other band I had just before returning to Givre. So they're, and I think they're amazing and they're a big influence. So you should listen to them if you don't know them.
Before anybody asks, I once again represent, I think by now I should say my favorite black metal band of all time, Ulfa. German black metal. Meeting Pink Floyd somewhere in the middle. I know I'm pushing them very, very often, but it's one of the bands that more people must listen to. So we've already found out by now, you know, you're a band from Quebec. Would you also, in a way, say that you're une band québécoise? Like, that there is some kind of cultural influence, not only thematic influence, but also like cultural thing that frames you, which is Quebecois?
Clearly.
Well, I think, go ahead.
Okay. I think it's a bit hard to define like what it means in precise term, just in terms of maybe musically or something like that, but there's certainly a big scene here that influenced us. I don't know if that's where you were going.
Yeah. Like there's a big black metal, Quebecois black metal scene. I think for many reasons, we are part of that. just by what we're listening, what we were listening growing up here, and like the links David has made with the scene in Montreal, and as you said, on a more on a team thematic basis, like well, obviously we write in French because that's our language. And we're not really good in English, as you can say.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and, yeah. Your English is much better than my French. Come on.
Oh, well, thank you.
For sure.
But yeah, coming from here, like, people don't, I don't know how much you guys in Europe knows about, like, French Canada and Quebec, but, like, we live our lives completely in French, so... Like, that's for sure an element of that what shapes our music. But
do you think that...
Did you have a...
Yeah, I have, like, another idea that always comes to mind when I speak with people from Quebec. I always have, like, the imagine... Not the imagine, but a thought or a feeling as if I'm talking to people who are living on an island, which is not an island. Not only because of the language, but also... I mean, of course, there are connections to the rest of Canada, clearly. But I always have the feeling as if, you know, there are also clear cuts and clear, not borders, but clear differences between Quebecois and other Canadians. Is that just my imagination or is there something to that?
Oh, no, I think there's lots of differences. Like, as you could tell from the music, we're really interested in history. And, like, just the basis, I think we'll go there furthermore in the interview. But, like, French Canada was the only Catholic majority on the North America. So that's, I think, culturally, that has shaped us a lot, too. So maybe even in the character or in the... Like, it might be a cliche, but us in Quebec, we see, like, the English world a little bit like a, well, like you guys in Europe might see it too. It's like a big corporation world that we don't understand really well sometimes. And there are, like, these kind of cultural differences too.
And there are clearly... rivalities, and I don't know, some anti-Quebec thinking outside of Quebec in Canada or inside Quebec. There's harmony too, but there is clearly some tension at some point. You can see on the internet people saying, like, really anti-French comments, and I think there's been, like, historically, a strong movement to protect the culture here, to keep the French alive, and like law enforcement to make everything in French so we stay French, and it perpetuates. And I think that can create some tension because there are not those kinds of restrictions anywhere else in Canada, so maybe that frustrates some people that try to come here, and so I don't know. It's just a different climate from and different things to think about, like when you arrive here and live here.
So. And the political landscape was mainly center left leaning in Quebec for many years, like starting in 1970s, and it's like our political flavor here, like I would say for Europeans it might it's more like a light nationalism base in Quebec, coupled with left leaning ideas like a state taking care of its citizens and things like that. So that's our flavor in North America as well. And some parts of Canada think it's, it's in some part it's unique, but it's a little bit backward for them too sometimes.
It's very interesting that you say that. You know, that's something that I also sometimes perceive. I wouldn't even call it nationalism to a certain degree, because I know that there have also been tendencies to step away from Canada and become an own country, an own territory. But I wouldn't go as far as say it's like a nationalist society. No, nothing at all. It's rather, also something that I perceive from the outside. It's the Americans would say it's more liberal, whereas we Europeans would say, it sometimes just makes a little bit more sense. because what Americans call liberal, that to us is like, that's the way we have been doing it for I don't know how long. I've seen that. That is also an interesting combination, you know, like this on the one hand, we're trying to protect what we have, and at the same time, we're definitely more liberal. That is also, I think, one of those very interesting and very positive examples of what it could be like. You have been talking about history. Is there also some kind of historical perception of, okay, this was the region that was first settled amongst all of Canada, and that is also some kind of tradition that we go back to?
I think, like, you mean in our music?
Not only in your music, also in like the general kind of traditions, values.
Oh, that it's linked to like the oldest European colony in North America. I wouldn't say it's, because there has been a lot of movement, I think, to get away from the religious thinking that was maybe more linked to that early settling mindset. I think now, there's been a movement away from that to something more, modern, secular. So there's no, and still it's like 400 years old. And there's some, certainly it's not that old. Like, so there's not a real link to that. Maybe when you go to Quebec City or something like that, you see some like old vestige of the past. But most of the time, it's the architecture is really modern, and you don't have that feeling of like history when you walk in our town where we come from. It's like it founded in 1920s, so it's really early. It's not like I feel when been to Europe that you have a sense of history when you walk in the streets and you see like, oh, this place is old and it has there's a culture that comes with that too. We don't really have that here, unfortunately. Unfortunately, maybe more the like East Coast of United States, maybe like there's something like that.
It's more preserved in New England than it is in Quebec, that's for sure. But I think the basis of our history goes back to the New France era, so the colony of New France, but the way Quebecers see themselves like a nation, that really comes from 19th century. So like the traditional French Canadian culture, I would say, comes more from the 19th century. And it's interesting to see that it comes from our link to England, to colonial England. Yeah. So we are very very much influenced as well by the English way of thinking, and so our culture, let's say our traditional form comes from both France and England, and as well as the influence of of the land itself, North America, and the first native people who lives there. I think we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yes,
but...
we have to. Yeah. What I, first of all, it's wonderful to hear Jean Lou talk because he is so influenced by French in his way of speaking English that he pronounces words the way that Germans would pronounce them. It's funny.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. When Jean Lou says, maybe I haven't heard you say that, David, but when he says like England, he doesn't say England, he says England, which is like what we in Germany also say. That's funny. But coming back to where the band, where Givre was established, northeastern Quebec, a very rural area, as you have mentioned.
Yeah.
We have established that Quebec is like an island without being an island. But how different must we then imagine the life in your hometown? Because I'm very sure it's very different from Montreal, right?
Well, Montreal is a big, like it's a big North American city with lots of influences from the U.S. and from the English Canada. But here in Abitibi-Témiscamingue, it's yes, it's rural. It's a lot of forest, and it's like a resource region. So it's a mining town, and it's a mining region. So like 30% of the money here comes from the mining industry.
Wow. Okay.
And I would say it's an original setup because well, the economy is really based on that, so there's not lots of like cultural institution and things like that. But it's a small regional town. It's 40,000 people here in Rouyn-Noranda, where we were born. And I guess I came back here because all my people lives here, and I enjoy it, but it can be boring as well.
But I see it a bit differently, maybe, because you say like Quebec is like an island in the sea of English or something like that, but the territory is very big, and like close to Montreal and Quebec City, there the cities are and the towns are close to each other, but when you venture a bit further north, there's like really big gaps when there is absolutely nothing. And that's something about Rouyn, is that there's about a 6-7 hour drive of almost nothing before you arrive to Rouyn. So it's very isolated. And I think that caused, Rouyn is the biggest town in that particular area. So I think that caused a bit of effervescence culturally. And like, for example, that there is a metal scene in Rouyn. There have been, we seen when we were teenagers, a lot of bands form in a different variety of metal genre, from death metal, more hardcore, more black metal, brutal, a big variety. And the organizer were really like proud of the town and trying to make it really active. So they brought really big bands like Vader, Behemoth, Aborted, just many like I don't know, AAA metal bands, like huge. Huge bands that came to the small town, and the shows were filled. Like there were more people than I saw, and then I seen. Like there were more people in the underground shows than there is now in Montreal. Like maybe when we do a show here, it's like maximum 150 people, and in Rouyn, almost always there were 200, 300 people at the shows. So I don't know. It's isolated. It's a small town, isolated, but the community is still alive, and maybe a bit less today on the metal scene. But there's some things happening and they want to keep it alive. So that's interesting.
Would you say that self-isolation also led to a sense of self of a need for self-sufficiency? That, you know, we, as you said, the community, we have to stick together in a way, so we have to support each other.
Sure, and I think that's even more true for the smaller towns where you see a community get together even closer than you see in the Rouen. Like Rouen is a really small scale Montreal, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But if you go like in the more rural place where there's only forest, I don't know, La Motte, there's a there's I don't I know like there's a community there where that's for sure brings people a bit more together.
Just to get like a feeling for it, you've said that you drive between 6 to 7 hours from Montreal to Rouen. Is that from town to town, or is that really like, how should I say, you've mentioned there is basically nothing. So is that a 6 to 7 hour drive between two towns or between these two particular towns? Or is it,
between these two. But there's like a forest of, there's like a gap of 3 hours of pure forest. It's like a preserved park area.
Mm-hmm.
So that really like squeeze us in the north, isolated, because that forest patch is, there's nothing in there.
David, you mentioned that so particularly, and you pointed that out so clearly. Is that also in a way, I used that idea of an island, but maybe that's wrong, because, you know, when you look at Quebec as being isolated, a little isolated from the rest, is it, I think what you try to say is that Quebec is not one unified area, because then there are, again, many, many different ones. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because the territory is just so big, and the landscape changes also if you go from a region to another. We don't have access to the sea in Rouen. There's just forest and some lakes and no mountains. Like the landscape is completely almost completely flat, and if you go more on the east side or something like that, the landscape changes and the culture is centered around other things. There's no mines, and so yeah, just clearly a different, the accent varies also, people speak differently from a region to another.
So now that we have established some kind of feeling for Quebec as an area or as a multitude of areas, you've also mentioned it. There is one thing that unites all of them, and that is Catholicism. We have already mentioned the name of a new record. I hope I pronounce it correctly, Le Cloître. The one before that is Messianique. So Catholicism plays a role in your music. Before we come to the new record, would you say that you yourself consider yourself Christians, or is that just part of your upbringing?
I can only speak personally, but I ask myself quite often that question. I don't think I'm Christian, because I would have to be, I would have to practice on a regular basis, things like that. But I'd say it's more of an intellectual interest. Like I'm working I wouldn't say historian, because I don't have the title, but I'm working as a freelance searcher in history in my region for a museum and things like that. And I think one of my main aim is trying to see what we forgot about that past and what we're trying to hide ourselves from that past. So I think it's a misconception of, well, I can only talk for Quebec, but like in the 1960s in Quebec, there was like a big cultural movement that pushed the Catholicism aside, and I think for the best mainly. But now we're like in this weird cultural setup that we're trying to like to cherry pick things from our past, but keeping in the shadow that all these things are coherent together because we were Catholic, we were such a Catholic people. So I think for understanding our past and our present culture, we need to look that like straight in the eyes and say what was good and what was bad about it. It's not about saying it was wonderful and things like that. It's just considering that it's the roots of maybe our whole culture. That's I would say like the angle that we took with the three previous albums.
Would you say that one cannot understand Quebec and also your region where you come from, but one cannot understand it completely without understanding a kind of Catholic history of a region?
I would say so. Yeah, I would say so. And just to touch a little bit on the history of our region, before the mining boom, it was entirely traveled by nomadic people for First Nations, and the first contact with them was really for the missionaries, like the Catholic missionaries that went in the forest to civilize them and to bring them the lights of Christianity, all that bullshit. But that really shaped our, like we said together, like there are small regional identities in Quebec, like when you go elsewhere than like the St. Lawrence Strip in the south, when you go upper north, all these regions are still very very impregnated by the native culture. Like the native still lives together with us or in their particular community. And I think that's something important to keep in mind, that like it's the, how would you say, it's like the we met in the middle of the wood 2 centuries ago, and now we created this weird in-between society up north. But like their culture has a very important it still has a very important
impact.
Impact, and it still lives well.
David, would you consider yourself Christian or Catholic?
I'm on the same page as Jean-Loup, a little bit less informed by history, but I was born baptized, but not in a very religious family or nothing like that, and always saw that thing, that religion, as something that was part of the landscape, but always I think I was more interested by like mysticism and spirituality as a wide concept, just exploring, reading philosophy and religious texts, philosophical interest. And I think by delving into that further, I got more interested in the mystical aspect of Christianity, as well aside of other religion and stuff like that. So I don't know, as Jean-Loup, like I don't go to church, I don't I don't pray. It's just it's it. I feel that the landscape, the religious landscape, has certainly shaped me in a way, and I try to recognize that and explore that in the way I can. But at the same time, I'm not I'm not like dedicated and devoted that much. But it's a subject that interests me deeply. That's what
so
I can say.
Again, I hope I pronounced it at least a little correctly. Le cloître, the cloisters, for
yes,
everybody
yes.
Who's not. What is it? Is my pronunciation correct, or is it totally
yes,
off?
Yeah.
Okay. For everybody who's not that familiar with Christian architecture, the cloisters is the part of usually a monastery where the monks go after their reading, after their regular service, which is more than once a day, and they use the cloisters to walk around a square, and usually the cloisters is also a roofed one, and they use this place as a place for inner contemplation and for like contemplating what you just heard in the service, in the mass before. First of all, when you wrote that new record, was there a specific cloister that you were thinking of?
I think the idea came that the idea was to explore the lives and the production, literary production of like various women in the church. So the title, maybe Jean-Louis, you can elaborate on that, but the title came as like all these women that lived in different times, their common space was the cloister, like
mm-hmm.
the conceptual abstract cloister, maybe. Like, it's
yeah.
a place where they all come together. So that's the album, and maybe like Jean, the text come like maybe, yeah, Jean-Louis can talk about it, but you like there is more text than what we put on the album. There's like a wider range, and we only selected five or six for the album, and to make songs out of them. But it's part of a literary work Jean-Louis is working on also. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, when we were living together, me and David in Montreal, 3 or 4 years ago during the pandemic, like that's the time lapse during when we composed all three first albums. So this Le Cloître included, well, mainly, and I'm also we could say a writer or something like that. I'm writing things, and I published my first book last year. But at that time, I was working on historical poetry, I could say. And the concept was I called this corpus Le Cloître as well, and it's just like a series of portraits that shows Catholic women, historical figures of Catholicism, and all of them mystic women, and mainly like my interest is in these Catholic saint women, like a martyr, and all those sort of thing. And like, you know, in the 17th century, there was a era in Catholicism in which like the people really strived about the self-inflicted pain,
mm-hmm.
and that was like the main obsession of Catholicism at this period. And I'm choosing like forgotten figures of this century and past that, and I'm writing poems about them. So I have like a book that I, if an editor is interested in publishing it, I'm looking now. I'm not actively searching to publish it, but I might someday publish these poems about the saint woman. So yeah, the album is a part of these texts.
So
that's
then...
that sounds very weird, I know, but
it's one of my hype subject.
It sounds as if then the place is like a fictional get together, like Boccaccio's Decamerone, you know, like it's a place where then those stories are told. Yeah, I like that. I like that. So then you said you have more poems about those holy women. I'm thinking whether they were all nuns. I'm not sure, but were they all nuns, Jean-Loup, or is there also
not all. The sixth woman we chose, I think they were all nuns, if I'm not mistaken myself. Yeah.
And you've also said it, you know, there is a wide range of historical periods. You even go back to Hildegard von Bingen, Hildegard of Bingen, who is one of those mystical figures in German female Catholic history, also because she was leading her own monastery, and at the same time she was also dealing with mysticism and with healing and all of that. Why did you choose those six for the book? Or not for the book, for the record, sorry.
Yeah, well, I would say David like had a look on the whole thing, and we chose together. But I think we had like the selection was made based on the idea that these texts could do like I don't know, badass songs, and like the themes in these poem were more like violent and more dark, and that's why we chose them. I bet.
It's in surface, I think so, and I think there's also the idea musically was to explore different genres and like do kind of style exercise in like that were matching a little bit on the text. So I think we were trying to select the text that were a bit different, one from each other. And also that cover a wide range of time. Like the first song is based on a woman that died in the 1980s. So that's really quite close to us. While Hildegard, it's it's medieval. So
1,000 years ago,
I think.
Yeah, and as you say, like Hildegard was a. Like the piece that David wrote, musical piece of Hildegard, is like more psychedelic because the theme of the poem is
which also then fits her biography, right? Because if you look at her from a modern perspective, she's not a classical nun, right? Of course, yes. Mm-hmm. When you chose that title, Le Cloître. Of course, this is a place of inner contemplation, but we must also be aware of the fact that inner contemplation can also be inner turmoil, and it can also be like terror. Was that also something that was clear to you, that is also part of it?
Yes. It's a shame that my English is so bad, because I like to speak about that in the language that I'm more eased into. But yeah, the aspect of like God is something that can eat you alive too, like in the Catholic traditional thinking, there's like this contemplation of God, but there's a big scare of him too. So like all these women, well, some of them at least, had the spiritual thinking of like God is a void, or God is like an erotic thing that I can refer to and lust to, and so like all these aspects are covered in my like in every pieces I try to go in a different like a mystic universe, and most of them are quite dark and scary, I would say.
Yeah, tending on the bit disturbing and just powerful image that blend love, suffering, and very like it's funny because like it's the last place where modern people like would imagine to find like interesting poetic images is in like the biographies of religious women, maybe, and that's that those like poetic really symbolic images just are found there. I think it's very interesting.
It's very interesting when Jean-Louis was talking, he was talking about the erotic. At the same time, I also, I don't know why, there is also something erratic about it, you know, the way that there is something between those women and God. There is also some kind of erratic, something false, isn't it? You know, that's
some of these women like in the 7th century, as I said, like in the early 7th century in France, a couple of these like really weird erotic like religious women went on, once they died they become saint. But like once you cross the half of the century, like the Catholic siege in Rome becomes very suspicious about them, and like the main opinion of the church turns upside down, and now they look at them more like holy fuck, rather keep away from them, because they're really like they're sorts of uncontrollable mystics. So they say things that that are really disturbing for men of church.
As you are Canadian, and as we're talking about Catholicism, I of course cannot let you go without like not going into detail, but your opinion on the next question. We are living in a time when more and more things come to light about the decades and centuries of Catholic institutionalized abuse of children in the Canadian residential school system. For everybody outside of Canada and who might not know what that is, we're talking about schools that were initiated by church and by state, if I remember correctly, to bring the light of Catholicism to the Indigenous children of Canada. That means children were being taken away from their families. They were maltreated, neglected, malnourished, sometimes beaten. And over the last couple of years, there have been discoveries of not tens, not hundreds, but thousands of unmarked graves, either on the grounds of those residential schools or near to them, sometimes in Catholic cemeteries, sometimes outside. I think the highest number that I've read about was co-assassination in Saskatchewan, where we're talking about more than 750 unmarked graves. Now, my question, during such a time when those revelations come to light, do you think it is becoming more difficult to remain a practicing, believing Catholic?
Well, I can't talk for myself because I am not one, but I know yes. people like intellectual. I follow them and what they write, and I think it became really difficult, like to keep the faith in one hand and to see all these things. And I think it's just obvious that Quebecers, we were. How do you say hypocritical about that past, about that history, our history and what we did, like hands in hands with the religion and our state to these native people. And I think yeah, it became very difficult to coordinate these two things. And I don't know. It's just a very complex and vast subject, but all we can say is like this is all a colonial enterprise to it was the plan was to erase these people or so to like to how do you say
Christianize
like
them, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was to Christianize them, but The idea was to
assimilate.
Have the territory vacant so we could colonize it. So you can put the blame on the church, you can put the blame on the state, but overall, and that goes with my idea of like, it wouldn't be wise to look at our history just by a secular frame or just by a religious. We have to put these two together mm-hmm. and have a look at why did we went behind the church when they told us let's go up north and colonize and there's no one there and it's your land and take it and like there was like a French propaganda, French Catholic propaganda saying like the north is yours, take it, like it's your soil, it's your, so that's really messed up. And I think if we want to understand that deeply, we have to reconnect ourselves to the thinking of these people, and knowing the history of Catholicism is one key to understanding that.
Mm-hmm. The thing I can add, like you said, like people are being hypocritical mm-hmm. about that. Like to elaborate on that is like it's easy to say. It's the state's fault. It's the religious fault. Mm-hmm. We are not religious. It's not our fault. Like no,
yeah,
like
yeah.
It's the everyone was on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's not like they were hiding or something. Like it's something that has been known, even if the graves were found recently. Like the existence of these schools and stuff like that, it's been taught to us, and it's
we all knew, and it was very taboo saying it when you were like when you were telling the tale of our history and all that. It was like a blank space saying, "Oh mm-hmm. yeah, there were some school. I don't know. Let's keep on.
Let's talk about the next stuff." Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar. Without trying to draw a parallel between the residential school system and the Holocaust, but there is a parallel in the way that Germans ignored their neighbors being taken away and Canadians ignoring native children were taken away. There is a parallel. Ignoring something for the sake of not wanting to know.
Uh-huh. And I think there are many parallels too in the like in the this how would you say, like there's a deliberate attempt of like erasing or swallowing another culture so that you can live in peace with yourself. Like you still have the guilt when you see eye to eyes with a neighbor, you're like, oh fuck, what am I doing to them? But like there's a big construct, an intellectual construct, like to make them invisible so you can live in peace with yourself and say, oh yeah, that's our land, that always has been our land.
I would add pseudo-intellectual action that is going on. There is for me there is a very, very good book by a German historian who researched the way that Germans tried to, well, get this out of their head, what they were doing to their neighbors. It's by a German historian called Peter Longerich. Anyone out there from Germany, if you ever get that book, if you come across it, buy it. It's called Davon haben wir nichts gewusst. He basically, I'll translate that for you guys. He says that there were lots of Germans who, after World War II, when they were asked about what had happened, and most of them said something like, oh, we did not know anything. We did not know anything about it, even though it's never a question of you in the plural, but you as a singular. The German language there has a difference between du and sie. And so they were asked, like, did you yourself, you, one person, did you know what was going on? And they all said, we did not know anything about that. So they tried to push that to the back of their mind. And I think that is something that what David also mentioned, you know, something like that can never happen without people looking away. Coming back to your music, because that's more important. Is your music also, in a way, your kind of, or your method of dealing with the problems of Catholic belief?
I wouldn't claim something like so intellectual about the music. I'd say it just comes from a passion, and maybe is fueled by interest and passion about these subjects and stuff like that. That makes maybe a coherent whole with the composition. But and that maybe, yeah, merges into something that delivers the message or something like that. But I think at the bottom, like, I'm just a fan of metal, and I want to create, and just it comes from a passion and intuition, and after that it merges with the themes and becomes something that delivers a message. Yeah, but it does not start with the intent of delivering a message when I pick up the guitar and write some riffs, you know.
When we talk about the tracks on Le Cloître, it feels like another step towards establishing or towards perfecting the Givre sound. There are wonderful melancholic soundscapes, and then they're mixed with thunderous light beings, like lightning in a bottle. Is that something where you say, like, okay, now we are closer to what is the Givre sound? Like, we're coming a step closer to our, with every album, we're coming a step closer to our musical vision, David?
There's maybe I can talk a bit about like the progression of the evolution of my approach to, I don't know, metal music.
Oh, it's so interesting. He already leaves the room. That's a good band.
He knows
mate.
All of that.
But go on, David.
So, we started to make music together when we were 16. And we started the Givre band at that time. And it was like really primitive black metal, 16-year-old, basic stuff. And after that, I built on that and created another band called Entheos, and which is really exploratory, like extreme metal pushed to really weird territories, and bring experimental jazz influences and make something really atypical and I don't know, personal. And I think this new iteration of Givre is a bit of a comeback from that like wild exploration to something more traditional for the first album, and after that rebuild on that new foundation of a basic black metal, and rebuild on that and to see where I can push that in new directions. So I think the first album is really like very, very raw and primitive. After that, Destin a bit more refined, and this new album goes in various style directions. So it's more of a process of exploration and refining the method of composing different kinds of song and trying to stay varied, like not create the same song twice and explore new direction always. So I have no personally written material for a next album that I do, but there's a new, the next Givre album is composed by another guitarist, so it's not like the same continuation of my sound that you can see on the three albums and the Anteos albums and all of that. So that's on pause for now. We'll see where that takes us. We have certainly ideas of maybe returning again to something a bit more raw in the future. That's my idea, because I think I don't want to go like further experimental and stuff like that. I feel like I already did that. I want to try always something new. So maybe that's the sound of Givre, just variation but iteration on this kind of thing you like that you describe, which is make melancholic soundscapes and dynamic song structures.
Of course,
I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Something that is also very characteristic for at least the new record and the record before. One hears samples from movies, field recordings. I still remember the first time I heard Destin Messianique. I immediately felt taken back 200 years ago, but still listening to a black metal band, which was amazing. I think that's a feat that is hard to achieve. But is that also something that you would say that is something characteristic for Givre, the incorporation of field recordings, of movie samples, and so on?
Yeah, of course. I think that's maybe a kind of the thing we had in mind when we made the first iteration on Le Pressoir Mystique, which is the first of these three new albums. The idea was to blend in some elements of electroacoustic or field recording, and to create something immersive in a unique way, if as much as possible. But yeah, mm-hmm. definitely that's something we try to refine and make more present and interesting from record to record.
What happens when I listen to some of the songs is that I'm feeling somewhere between times. On the one hand, it's clear it's a 21st century band, a good production. That is very clear. But at the same time, with those field recordings, you take people back several decades, sometimes centuries. And very often that happens through those samples or through field recordings. How do you go about? Are you looking for those specific sounds, or do you have an archive of sounds where you say, like, oh, maybe this moment here when I listen or when I hear something that's like a stagecoach being drawn across cobbled streets? Do you have an archive, or do you record that for a specific song?
It depends. For Destin Messianique, I think it came with the themes of the songs. Sometimes I think we just had like the idea that for the first song we want to hear the flag wave in the wind. We want to like there's something that comes with the themes and the idea of the vision that the text gives, like and we want to stick to that and create an atmosphere that that just elaborates on that and create something immersive and maybe a storytelling or something that follows the song structure.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't, for that album, it's cherry picked, like just this song needs a flag, mm-hmm. the song, the sound of a flag. This song needs, like the stagecoach, like you said, or something. Like we wanna feel on the field, and hear the labor or something like that.
And I think so, we found those samples on internet. We did not record them ourselves.
Yeah, sound banks, mostly, like that follows my work as a composer for film and sound designer, like the same idea to just convey an atmosphere. And for this new album, we had this movie, this like one specific movie about nuns. And we just, I think Jean-Louis watched through the movie and found some specific phrases that fit the whole thematic, and that was something just that was added to create a sense of cohesion throughout the album. But it's less centered, it's less I don't know, maybe evocative, or there's no like a field recording on this new one. Is just centered on the movie sound and ambience created with the music, I think.
I would just add, me and David were also working together sometimes for a museum, like creating like oral history pieces for museums. So like we take archives from an old man telling how he built our city, and so I think that goes in the same universe. Like we're used to work together and used to work with like old voices and like well, for my part, that goes with the idea of putting as much as history that is possible in a song too.
Would you feel misunderstood if I said that when I listen to Givre, especially to the new record, I sometimes feel as if I'm in a black and white movie?
Well, that's good.
That's good. Yeah, I think that's
good,
because the movie is itself is in black and white, and I think my vision for the album was for it to feel like very like claustrophobic, to feel like and I think the production maybe echoes that, like it's very compressed, very brick wall from time to time, but the production is very like not that harsh, because I think the production is good, but it's very like compressed and stacked and mm-hmm. aggressive, way more than the last mm-hmm. Destin Messianic, which mm-hmm. which was a lot more dynamic, I think, that mm-hmm. conveys more a sense of space, landscape and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. While this new one is
Of course, another reason for me feeling as if I'm in a black and white movie is also the cover of a record. The cover itself is, in contrast to the one before, this is a black and white cover. You see somebody holding a cross, or carrying across. And of course, the idiomatic use would be that that person is bearing a cross connected to all the pain and all the problems connected to that specific action. Did you already from the cover itself want to bring people into this Christian problem, into this problematic Christian belief system?
The photo in itself, I think, is very fascinating. Maybe, like it's hard when you don't know what's maybe it's hard like to put a description under the on the album and say this is a photo of Pierrette and but like Jean-Loup, maybe you can explain the history of the girl and like with the. This in mind, like it conveys a lot of meaning, but
Well, with my work, I'm collecting a lot of old photos from our region, from the Rouen region and the mining region. And this photo in particular, I always liked it because it's one of the only photos that exists from this little girl. She was called Pierrette Réginbald. So she's a girl from like.
Don't make me try to repeat that name. Please.
No, Pierrette Réginbald, it's a very French-Canadian rural name. And she was quite a weird little girl. Like at age 11 or 12, I think she went in a wood near like a mining town, near the town we grew up in. And she saw like a water source flowing, and she said she... Saint François d'Assise, how do you say that? Saint Francis.
Saint Francis?
Like he.
Yeah.
Yeah, Saint Francis. She saw Saint Francis appearing to her. Well, this has a symbolic meaning in some ways because Saint Francis is like the patron of wildlife and animals and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In such a. Like. Our region is like an ecological nightmare from the mining. So this has this symbol in it. And like she went completely crazy and people came from all parts of Quebec and even North America to see her having these mystical moments, saying she was talking with Saint Francis. And that did like a little scandal in the region. And once the Second World War passed and she grew up being a woman, she had like all sorts of mental issues. And it came a time when like a newspaper here in Canada made a piece about her, saying like she was just a liar, a fraud, and she went to jail too, and all these things. So I thought, first of all, the photo was very telling. Like it's miserable, it's dark. She's all little, and she's carrying a way too much big cross for her. But all that crazy background with that, like that's something that interests me a lot. The edge of what is a mystical experience and what is a mental disorder experience. So. She's like right at the line of it.
Yeah, she's walking the razor's edge. Yes, of course. Last question, and I bet I would like to stick also with that picture a little bit, because of course, as you said, she's carrying a cross that is way too big for her. It must have been really painful to do that. And in a way, when you also reveal the background, it seems to be for your region a very iconic picture. Is that another moment where you say, okay, there is something about Catholicism which combines pain and a spiritual ascent? You know, Jesus died on a cross, she carries the cross. All that pain that is connected to Catholicism leading somewhere to a better life? Is that something that, at least for me, embodies the perfect moment for black metal? And I would like your opinion on that. I think black metal and Catholicism work perfectly, because musically it fits very well, and also thematically. Would you say that is like one of the best combinations for black metal? Black metal and Catholicism.
Strangely enough, certainly, and I think well, like, the founders of black metal are all centered around religious imagery, and even if it's like supposed to be I don't know, blasphematory or something like that, it's still talking about it, and it's it's just part of the universe. Maybe people want to deny it, but it just keeps the spirit alive, I think. I don't know. Do you have something, an idea about that?
Well, I'm just thinking, when we were doing the first album together, when we were living together, we had that joke saying, like, what, in the end, what's more grim, like the cross reversed or the cross in the actual sense of it? Like, there's so much weird and twisted components to traditional Catholicism that's our idea too. Like, there's nothing more black metal than like an old school 19th century like a priest going in the wood kayaking, and like we have that feeling that this imagery would fit perfectly with a grim black metal universe. And yeah, like I found it sometime a little bit gimmicky and embarrassing, like seeing this. I don't know. I think it's even darker, like taking the thing for what it is, than making this satanic. I don't know. I don't personally. I don't feel connected to this. I think it's a little bit artificial.
The satanic. The satanic imagery, and like you said, the reverse crossed, the dead animals, like it's still something that's really actual in black metal, but in maybe, I think our opinion is overdone in a way that it doesn't seem to impress anymore, or conveys meaning. It's just like the repetition of the same imagery over and over and over of this kind of blasphematory and shocking things. But it's so much, when you listen, you've been listening to black metal for years, like you see it so much, it's just plain and the norm, like it's just every, like the basic black metal thing is this satanic thing, I in my opinion, from what I see.
And isn't it the way that sometimes that's just too easy to go that satanic route without looking at the real problems in church? One last question, because that just came to my mind before we go to the quickfire round. I know that you've also been working with hagiographies in order to find out more about these women for the songs. How do you then feel? I mean, like, dealing with a hagiography is always problematic, because, of course, that person is always idolized. It's always too good to be true, you know. But how do you then feel about... nowadays, already books and studies on people like Euronymous or Quorthon or other important black metal figures, when you read those biographies and texts, they're also very close to hagiographies. How do you feel about that?
It's a very interesting question. I don't personally read like biography of a black metal musician. I never read any, but I read a lot of old hagiographies, and I can say that it's a lit literature genre that still exists in like journalistic pieces, and you can see it. Like, is there any biography that was ever written that isn't a little bit an hagiography? Like, you select these moments that are symbolically very charged. So I don't know for like the black metal musician, but in my thinking, there's no such thing. There's no differences between a biography and an hagiography. They're all quite the same in some ways, I'd say.
Maybe because some of the hagiographies, passages that are in the text, like, it's not idealized in a way that's always like beautiful and stuff like that. Sometimes it's like so disturbing, so much pain, so much. It's just it's over the top.
Thinking of Louise Dunea that we use for the opening song of the album,
the second song, yeah, which translates to like Louise of the Void or something like that.
Yeah, she was a French mystic of the 17th century, and in the hagiography written by just a regular Jesuit, like how do you say those, like a priest. So he tells about her that she used to lick like the wounds of her co-religioner, of the other nuns that lived with her, and like she did all those disgusting thing, like eating like rotten flesh, and like inflicting all sorts of self pain. So even in hagiography, there are some twisted things that insist very much on like the dark side of the character of the person that we're trying to depict.
By the way, that question that you asked, Jean-Loup, yes, there are hagiographies that are too idolized. I still remember from my history classes at university, there is an hagiography of the first German Roman Emperor, Charles the Great, Charlemagne. And when you look at his biography, which basically is nothing more than a hagiography, that just can't be true, because sometimes it just wipes over and denies certain facts, like Charles basically telling the Saxons, oh, you have a choice, death or baptism. When you look at the hagiography by Einhard, you will see that he presents that in a much better light. But I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Hagiographies are very, very difficult to deal with. Guys, first of all, thanks for all the insight. Thanks for all the interesting deep talk. But now let's get to the nitty-gritty. Nobody gets around in Veil of Sound interviews without having to stand the pain of a quick fire round. You will get 10 to 12 questions, always couples, and you have to choose one of the choices and give a short explanation. Let's start off with something easy. Putin versus Fevre Olard. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Five Olard or Putin?
Oh, Five Olard, okay. Five Olard, for sure.
What?
For you too, David?
Yeah, Five Olard is more healthy, I think. So yeah, maybe for the long term, Five Olard.
Then, of course, I think that's the next one is an easy one. Montreal or Montreal?
Montreal.
Montreal. To get a little bit into music, I'm very sure you two know this band, and you also know its two sides, Blood Incantation. Which side do you prefer? The ambient stuff, like Time Wave Zero, or the very progressive tech dev stuff like Hidden Histories?
I'd say I have to choose. I'd go with Hidden History, but I really prefer, I think that their best stuff is the last EP they put out, which blends the two together really well. And I think that's the way they should go forward, like blend the two together. I think the ambient stuff is not that interesting, in my opinion. I think there's better ambient music, but if they continue to blend it, that's the way forward.
Jean-Loup?
Sadly, I have to admit, I don't know much about them. I don't listen much. Like, I'm too much into black metal to listen anything else.
at least that's very honest. I think those, the next two, I hope I looked it up correctly, but I think those are two bands that are also from Quebec. Nordic Winter versus Cantique Lepreux.
Nordic Winter. I don't know about them. Yeah, do you know?
Me too. I listen to Nordic Winter more than I do for Cantique Lepreux. It's like more of a, I don't know, slow pace, depressive, suicidal kind of thing.
Yeah, it's more DSPM.
Yeah, they're quite good. Yeah.
So your choice.
So which one do you prefer?
I prefer Nordic Winter.
Mm-hmm.
That's our label mates.
Well, I know. I shouldn't say that, but
let's talk about Belgian black metal mixed with a lot of other stuff. Two bands that are both part of the Church of Ra. Amen Ra versus Oathbreaker.
For me, it's Amen Ra. The other one, I don't know about it. But Amen Ra, I've listened to a lot of it, yes. And they're like, they also have like a weird religious imagery. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Their own church.
I don't know where they stand on
Ra.
That. Okay, Church of Ra.
Yeah, they have like their own congregation, so to speak. And in that collective, there are also other bands like Oathbreaker and other bands. Some not only from Belgium, but also, for example, from France. So yes, David, your choice. Also, Amen Ra.
Just to be part of the club, maybe, but I have no like hard opinion on both of these bands. I listened to a few songs, but I'm not like deeply invested in any of them.
You both spoke about your love for music and movies. So I'll give you two somewhat religious-based, I would say horror movies. The Nun versus The Passion of Christ.
Passion of Christ.
yeah. You just want to see him bleed. That's what's all about.
Oh yeah.
Just the Nun is not my kind. Like the popcorn horror.
Montreal or Montreal.
Jump scare core.
Yeah. Montreal does not have a lot of professional sports teams anymore. Quebec in general. But if you had to choose, would you rather have the 1970s and 1980s Expos or the 1970s and 80s Canadians?
Wow, we're not into sports so much, but the 1970s, well, the Canadian were, I know they were like a great team, so I bet we rather go with them and have the glory of the past. I don't know if Expo was a good team. I don't know anything about baseball.
Are they renowned? Like, do they have any?
Well, the Expos are now, if I remember correctly, the Expos are now the Washington Nationals.
Yeah. But at the time, were they like a big thing?
Well, if I remember correctly, they made the playoffs a few times, but never got the big thing. They had the problems that there were other teams much better, the Yankees, the Dodgers. So that was a problem for the Expos.
So let's ditch them. Go with it.
Let's stick to the Quebecois thing a little bit, but in moving into another genre, and I know Jean-Loup will already have problems because it's not black metal. Godspeed You Black Emperor versus Do Make Say Think.
Godspeed.
Jean-Loup?
Yeah, big fan. Jean-Loup.
I'd say Godspeed. It's the only one I've ever listened to, but...
Okay. Two French black metal bands, although definitely adjacent to black metal. Not black metal, death metal. So it's like black and death, or however you want to call that. Blut aus Nord versus Deathspell Omega.
I'd Death go Spell. With Blut aus Nord, yeah.
Oh, wait.
And David,
Death Spell
for you're more Deathspell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One more movie couple. And I chose black and white. And I also chose two movies that are iconographic in the way that they compose pictures. One is old, Psycho, and the other is pretty new, The Lighthouse. Which one do you like more? Just liking, not, you know, which really? One is more important or stuff like that, but just which one do you like more?
I think Lighthouse really struck me, while actually Psycho, I just studied it, like, and I have a more cold observation of it, while the music is very, is genius. I think The Lighthouse really struck me in the modern landscape, like, that's big impact.
Yeah, it's a real, also the frame itself, right? This square frame picture. That's, it's a really good movie. Jean-Loup, your choice.
It's a shame to say, but I don't listen to movie so much. I'm not sure I've seen even Psycho, so.
Black metal only in books.
Yeah, he doesn't have any time. I've reasoned the archive, or he's listening to black metal. But one has to say, you know, that's at least very, very clear. last one. And those are label mates of you from Holland, from the Netherlands. I'm glad I don't have to choose, because I couldn't. But I'll give you Flüsterers versus Iskander.
Flüsterers for me, yeah. I've listened to their two last record. It's really good, like a punk fucked up vibe. I like it a lot.
I'd go with them too.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, Flüsterers for me too.
So as soon as I see my friend Omar from Iskander, I will tell them, oh, don't go on tour with those Canadians. They ditched you for Flüsterers. Guys, thanks for all your time. Thanks for the insight into the record, and also into your region where you come from, because I have to admit I don't know too much about Quebec itself. I probably know more about Quebec black metal than about the state itself, so thanks for that. Of course, also thanks for the great new record, Le Cloître. Everybody, it will be out at the end of March on Eisenwald. You can already listen to the first single, if I remember correctly. It's only There's one two. Single right now. Yeah. Which two. Gives you a very good idea of what the record will be like. And I can already say it will be hard for it. It would be surprising for me if there are 10 more records that I like more this year, which would kick you out of the top 10 for my album of the year list. Guys, thanks for all your time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the interest again.
Bye-bye.
Good questions. Bye.
Thank you.